A warm welcome to the May episode of the Baltic Triangle podcast, episode 44, would you believe, where we hear from the real movers and shakers in the Liverpool City region, with me, Mick Ord.
And me, Mark Reeson. Well, this month we'll be hearing from Claire Lewis, the CEO of Baltic Ventures, a not-for-profit tech accelerator which has been set up to support ambitious tech businesses in the north to access angel and venture capital investment without having to go cap in hand to London.
It's very much about putting, Liverpool on the map. And we say that we're hyper-local with, global ambition and hyper-local, being based in Baltic and that being a really kind of key part of who we are as a brand. And so if we can be, that connector for great founders and great companies with investors, then, the focus... It brings the focus to Liverpool. So we're going to be launching on the 10th of May. We're having a big party. Everyone's invited. But it's in the middle of Eurovision and we just thought that was a really great time, when the world's looking at Liverpool, or at least Europe, to have the launch for Baltic Ventures because we are about kind of being part of this city and looking out globally.
And we hear the fascinating thoughts of Miles Pearson from Next Big Thing, one of the genuine movers and shakers in the property development and architecture sector, with properties in the Baltic Triangle and most recently Crosby.
I would actually say that the architecture is the second most important thing. A really good portfolio of interesting tenants is what makes the buildings interesting, and then manage it well and keep them and get a good mix. That's what makes these places really work.
Good stuff. A little bit more from Miles later on. Mick, Eurovision is almost upon us, isn't it? So lots of things happening, lots of areas of the city that have suddenly sprung up in different colours, gardens planted, etc., etc. What's your thoughts?
It's obviously great for the city. I mean, I guess when at the time some people will be listening to this, we'll know who actually won the Eurovision Song Contest. But it is fantastic for the city and they've really made an effort in Ukrainizing the city, if that's a word, haven't they? Because you get off the train at Lime Street and it's on the platform, isn't it? It's fantastic stuff. There's a lot of stuff going on. Ukrainian artists being celebrated. The flags are out. It's a unique occasion in more ways than one this year, isn't it, mate?
Yes, definitely. Anyone who's got a memory of what went on in the city in 2008 during the City of Culture can only be reminded of that with this going on, can't it?
Yeah, it's very, very similar. And we'll get so many people coming to the city from outside. And we just, ultimately we want to put a spotlight on Ukraine, don't we, really? But it's great that the city's embraced it so much. And I hope it continues beyond Eurovision, actually. That would be nice, that. Like the Capital Culture, a lot of the themes that were developed in the run-up to Capital Culture and the things that happened in 2008 continued, didn't they, and developed. So let's hope something similar happens here.
Absolutely. The legacy of 2008 was fabulous. And I do think some of the things that I've seen springing up around the city will stay around for a little bit longer, defo.
Yeah, that'd be great. Before we start on the interview, just a quick mention to Baltic Creative CIC. They support the digital and creative sector in the Baltic Triangle business area. And they, of course, are the sponsors of this particular podcast. Big thanks to them. Now, we hear a lot in the news about how we as a country will need to invest much more in our tech sector if we're to successfully compete on a global scale, whether that's with China, Europe, or indeed America. The big themes in the business and increasingly the front pages are how far AI is going to change our lives and indeed how this is already happening, and whether, for example, ChatGPT is being used for good or ill, or both, and how it will develop over the coming months and years. In the UK for the tech sector, London is as ever ruling the roost, with easier and more effective access to funding and investment for ambitious tech companies who want to expand. But the situation is not so great in the north, and particularly the Liverpool City region, which is in real danger of being left behind, despite the innovation and talents that exists here, but not necessarily the investment and support needed to thrive and expand. But the establishment of Baltic Ventures should hopefully redress the balance. It's a new non-for-profit company backed by more than £4 million from Liverpool City Region Combined Authority and will create a platform to support northern tech businesses to access angel and venture capital funding and crucially, expertise, without having to head to London. Baltic Ventures is based in the Baltic Triangle area of Liverpool at Digital House off Jamaica Street, and that's where I caught up with the CEO, Claire Lewis, who told me how excited she is about the work they're doing and the impact they hope to make with the tech sector to help us catch up with London and give real help to new startups in the region.
Well, it's been quite a long journey to get to this point, which started about three or four years ago. And it has involved a lot of people from both the Baltic community and also across the city. And I think that's what's kind of what one thing that's really powerful and interesting about Baltic Ventures is how many people have kind of come together and different threads and different parts of the journey to get to the point where we are now launching. So who are some of those people? They included people like Mark Lawler, obviously from Baltic Creative, as was, and also Erica Rushton. And so, you know, for a number of years, they've been looking at how do we have a tech accelerator or look at the sort of the support that those high growth tech companies are getting within the Baltic Creative community. So that they were one part of the conversation. Another part were, so Carl Wong and David Woods are the co-founders of Living Lens. So Living Lens started its journey around 2014 when David and Carl came together and they had a studio over at Jamaica Street. And a big part of their journey that Carl particularly really credits as the reason they became the success they did was that they went on a tech accelerator called Collider that was based in London. And they said it was that experience that really opened up for them the world of potential for their company, you know, how they could access the investment they need to build the technology that they did and to have the ambition that they did for Living Lens. So Living Lens was sold to a company called Medallia for $26 million about 3 years ago now, so just over 3 years ago. So that was another part of the journey. And when David and Carl exited from Living Lens, they really started the conversation as how do we make something like this happen in Liverpool, in this city? Why should founders have to go to London to get that sort of insight, support, connection, network, investment? We need to have this here. So that was another conversation. But then there was other people such as Mark Rathbone at Brabner's. He did a lot of work around setting up the LCR Angel Network. So he'd been having a conversation. And then there was Matt Johnson at Form. So everyone came together and said, okay, how can we collectively make this happen? And that started a conversation with a combined authority. And I think it was just one of those journeys where the stars aligned, like the right people were having the right conversations. And there was a, you know, coalition of the willing of, you know, how can we do something great for this city and take, you know, help take the tech ecosystem, the community to the next level. So the conversation went on for about, yeah, 2 or 3 years. And luckily the mayor and the combined authority liked what the proposition was and have decided to back it. That was a very long answer, wasn't it?
Well, that's okay. That's okay. It's a fairly long story. So you're funded by Liverpool City Region Authority.
Yeah. So Baltic Ventures has been set up as a new not-for-profit. We're a company limited by guarantee. And that not-for-profit has been funded by the combined authority. Yeah. And more, you know, importantly, we've been funded for 5 years. So that was a key part of the case that we were building. We're saying, you know, you could put in a couple of years funding, right? And it'll, by the time we've got it set up, it'll be wrapping up and it won't really necessarily make a long-term impact. And so the conversation was from the very beginning, how do we do something ambitious? How do we do something long-term? And how do we do something that genuinely kind of is anchored in this city and will have a long-term kind of impact and change the trajectory of where we're going? So yeah, so we've got 5 years of funding, which is quite unusual for a project like this. And we were just really lucky to work with an incredible team at the combined authority that really understood what the consortium were looking to do. They understood the ambition and they got behind that. And so we really worked on how does the funding need to work? How does this need to be sort of structured and shaped so that it delivers on the mission that everyone had around the table?
So the accelerator program itself starts in September. What are you looking for in terms of the companies that you wish to attract to this program?
So we're an accelerator that will run cohort programs over the next 5 years. And the first one starts in September. In terms of the companies that we're looking for, so cohort one will be 8 to 10 companies. Those companies can come from anywhere, not just Liverpool, anywhere in the UK, but the program is based here. So if companies want to come base themselves in Liverpool, then they can apply to the program. We are looking for great founders who are ambitious about growing a scaled tech company with technology and IP to be successful and with big market potential. So for the companies that are applying to the program, we want to see that they've got a bit of a prototype, maybe an MVP, and have some sort of traction or some sort of validation of what they're trying to do. That's the sort of sweet spot of what we're looking for. And we're also looking to work with really diverse teams as well. So I think, it's important that, companies that maybe don't necessarily sort of identify with the classic kind of tech startup image might, think of applying to this program.
So this could be for companies anywhere in the country. And yet before you were saying that a lot of the money for startups was based in London. So it won't necessarily help companies in this area. Is this what you're saying?
So I'm saying the program is going to be based here in person in Liverpool. So if a company from elsewhere in the country wants to take part, it means they will need to be based here. And so, the reason for us doing that is because it's about really opening up the Liverpool tech ecosystem to, international, global investors, mentors, etc. So the idea is that we're really building the community here and the focus here. So yes, it will benefit companies in Liverpool. But it's also, got an inward investment angle to it. It's about sort of attracting companies to want to be here and base here and to employ people here,
So what do they get? Because they do get equity funding, don't they, the successful candidates of the program?
They do. So alongside the program, which is worth around 40K, that's a four-month part-time program where they get to work with incredible kind of industry leaders, masterclass leaders, coaches, mentors, etc. But then also all the 8 to 10 companies that take part in cohort one, Accelerator 2023, get £50,000 of equity investment. So that's cash that they get to keep and invest and use in their company, however they see best in terms of, investing in their platform. That gets invested as equity. So it is a program for companies that have shares. So companies limited by shares, that's one of the qualifying criteria.
Is there a feeling that the culture is underdeveloped in terms of maybe other parts of the country?
There was a sense when we were researching and kind of working with the consortium that it's quite hard for founders who are trying to build an ambitious tech company to really find the connections to whether it's investors or kind of industry experts that they need within the city. It's been quite a fragmented kind of place. That's one of the things that we're looking to change. So, when you start out, you end up having tons of coffees with lots of people, and that can be dragged out over months and years, trying to meet the right people and make the right connections and work out, just to kind of orientate in terms of, what's around here and what support can I get. We want to really condense that down, fast track that so that, people can learn. Founders can learn really quickly, because if you're learning slowly, that's when you're kind of making mistakes and burning capital, and it costs you money, and it kind of can keep things smaller. So what we want to do is to fast track the opportunity to meet the right people and just put you on a track so that you can get to where you want to much quicker.
Is it fair to say then that that infrastructure is already there for the most part in London? It's just the rest of the country catching up? Or is Liverpool a particular case?
I mean, if you look at the stats, so Liverpool is a great place for startups. There are a lot of businesses that started up here, and I think kind of above the national average, but it's significantly down the scale in terms of companies that successfully scale up. So that's defined as a company that has, you know, 10 or more employees and that grows at a certain level, 20% more year on year. Liverpool is falling down in that area. Why? I don't know if I can diagnose it, but I think this is certainly, you know, one of the solutions for that is how can companies that are looking to scale quickly and are ambitious and have, you know, a global or large market that they're going after, how can we bring in the right support around them? I think also it's useful to say here that it's not just Baltic Ventures on its own trying to do this. There is a much kind of a broader vision that the combined authority is kind of bringing together. So they've invested in the angel network in the city. They've just announced that they're going to have a £20 million seed fund in the city, and they're going to start tendering for that for a fund manager in the next few weeks. And they've also set up Liver Labs, which is focused on the health and life sciences area. So there is a number of projects that are kind of working in concert with each other that are looking at, okay, what are the ingredients that you need in any city to really kind of bring this together so you've got, you're starting to pull in, you know, much bigger amounts of investment. But yeah, so London is, you know, a global leader. But what about the rest of the country? And also, it's an opportunity for us in the UK to kind of tap into that. Like, that money is there, those investors are there. But it's about relationships, and it's about having relationships with the kind of the investors that are, and them knowing about the companies that are here. So that's the kind of, those are the bridges that we're looking to build.
And how much of what Baltic Ventures is doing is about, in inverted commas, putting Liverpool on the map in terms of the other cities you've spoken about and indeed the rest of the UK?
It's very much about putting, you know, Liverpool on the map. And we say that we're hyperlocal with, you know, global ambition and hyperlocal, you know, being based in Baltic and that being a really kind of key part of who we are as a brand. And so if we can be, you know, that connector for great founders and great companies with investors, then, you know, the focus, it brings the focus to Liverpool. So we're going to be launching on the 10th of May. We're having a big party. Everyone's invited. But it's in the middle of Eurovision, and we just thought that was a really great time, you know, when the world's looking at Liverpool, or at least Europe, to have the launch for Baltic Ventures, because we are about kind of being part of this city and looking out globally.
I was going to ask you about Eurovision. How much? Because, I mean, it's such an amazingly large, well, global event.
Yeah.
How are you hoping to sort of tap into that? Or are you just thinking, look, we're doing our launch then, and anything that comes from it, great.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure that we've got like a well thought through sort of way of tapping into it. But yeah, we're having a launch on, you know, the middle of Eurovision week in the Baltic Triangle, which is obviously where all the party is going to be. And we might be sort of, you know, inspired theme-wise in terms of like the food and drink that you get. You know, I think because we've been talking to a lot of people nationally, internationally about Baltic Ventures over the last few weeks, well, few years, but definitely over the last few weeks. And, you know, the excitement of coming to Liverpool for our launch during that week, you know, everyone wants to be here. It's going to be like the tech party of the, you know, of the summer. So, it's good to kind of bring it together.
You mentioned before about the 10 companies that you're looking for to start in September on the Accelerator program.
Yeah.
Just go into a little bit more detail, if you would, about what they can expect if they are successful over the 4 or 5 month period that the Accelerator program runs.
Yeah. So it's going to kick off in September. And, you know, kick off and meet your fellow cohorts. That's a really key part of this, is meeting and kind of having this experience with other founders that are going through similar or at least parallel experiences. Each week you'll have a masterclass by an industry leader And over the course of the four-month program, we'll look at covering all the areas that commonly founders make mistake in. So whether it's, you know, around not really understanding product market fit, whether it's around kind of financial modeling, how they're preparing for fundraising, et cetera, we'll kind of take through in a structured program to get them to a point where they can really master those key areas. And at the same time, what we'll also do is look to understand what are the key challenges that you particularly as a company on the program are facing. And we will bring in a bespoke team of coaches and mentors to work with you throughout the 4 months. And then there'll be lots of fun things too. So we're going to be going to Slush in Helsinki to meet investors there and potential customers. We're going to have investor dinners in Manchester and in London as well. What else? And also getting to meet a number of corporate customers. So if you are a B2B proposition, we're also going to be hosting a number of events with corporates such as Very and with Arup that are looking at how companies could sell into those companies or clients around those companies and do proof of concept. So it's very broad, but it's also very tailored. We'll be very tailored to what those companies need. And, you know, we'll work with you to understand how you can get the most impact from the program.
I should probably know this, but what is Slush in Helsinki?
What is Slush? So Slush is, well, I believe the sort of the current number one tech conference that runs annually is based in Helsinki, and it's where all the best investors in the tech space go in the European kind of. So if you want to meet a lot of investors in a very short space of time, it's the place to be.
To offer that is some big deal, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think as well, you know, by taking the cohort and being part of, you know, the Liverpool contingent that's going to be there. You know, it can be quite hard and daunting as a founder on your own. So being part of a, you know, a program and a cohort that can advocate for you and help get you in front of those, you know, the right people is key. And just to add to the excitement as well, I don't know if I'm allowed to announce this, but I'm going to anyway. So we've also, Liverpool's been announced as a Slushed location. So what that means is there'll be a pre-event, an official Slush pre-event in Liverpool in September. So, you know, it's we're going to be on the map in terms of kind of being there as a Liverpool, you know, the Liverpool contingent in Helsinki. I don't know why they have to do it in December, because it's kind of bloody freezing. I'd rather go to Helsinki in the summer. But yeah, perfectly timed for our cohort. So it'll be right at the end of the cohort, and kind of just before they sort of wrap up for Christmas. And yeah, it'll be a lot of fun.
If companies are interested, they've listened to you and thinking, I wouldn't mind a bit of that. What do they need to do now and over the next couple of months?
Yeah, so applications opened this weekend. So you need to go to balticventures.uk, which is our website, and go to the website and you'll see there all the criteria and information about the program and also how to apply. So yeah, put your application in, do that now. Applications are open between now and the 20th of June. So yeah, put your application in.
Claire Lewis there. Mick, fascinating stuff. And how good is it, Mick, to see someone like that plonk themselves right smack bang in the middle of the Baltic Triangle?
Yeah, and hopefully businesses throughout the North, and obviously particularly Liverpool City region, they're the ones that we're interested in, will take advantage of this. I'll give the website address out afterwards of Baltic Ventures, but it's exciting and hopefully it will kickstart a lot of startups, because we know in this area there's a lot of talent, a lot of innovation, but they simply can't get the investment. And so this will give them a helping hand. And crucially, as she said, the expertise as well. And it's kind of worrying, isn't it, Mace, how far we are behind some other cities and particularly London in this particular league table, as it were.
Yeah, I mean, it would be so good for us to have someone on our doorstep that's got a real focus on what businesses could thrive in our city as well, isn't it?
Yeah, and what we ought to do is we'll find some of the companies who apply for the funding and the trading schemes and then follow them over the next few months and years, hopefully, and just see how they're doing, because that 50 grand or however much it is that they manage to secure could be a make or break amount for them, couldn't it?
Absolutely, yeah.
A startup business, but they're looking for investment. They're the people they particularly want to attract, whether they're from Liverpool, Blackburn, you know, Newcastle, wherever. So, yeah, I think we ought to definitely follow one of these companies who managed to secure a place on the project.
For my interview with Miles Pearson, I didn't have to travel too far for a change. His new offices are based in Crosby, just around the corner from where I live. And if you've driven past the Next Big Thing offices on Liverpool Road, you can't have failed to notice them. They're housed in the former car showroom, which was last being used as a charity furniture storeroom. Miles Pearson himself is the director and co-owner of NBT Offices, which owns Jordan Street Studios in the Baltic Triangle, Clock Tower Park offices, and of course, as I've just said, the Liverpool Road Studios. Miles' views on the current trends in architecture and property development are really interesting, particularly how the Baltic itself is developing and growing the amount of residential accommodation, as I found out when I went to see him.
I was actually working for an architect company called Shed KM, and with Urban Splash, there was a series of developments on Great George Street, which is just to the north of what we now know as the Baltic Triangle. Back then, it was the Jamaica Street industrial estate, I think. And it was quite clear that property development was heading down the road, heading out of town. And the Baltic had been spearheaded as a new area, and there was many conversations about what that would be. Bear in mind, at the time, it was a functioning industrial estate, but with an awful lot of empty buildings. And so I decided that seeing all the developments coming away from, say, Rope Walks, Chinatown, towards Parliament Street, that would be a good place to invest if you didn't really have much money. One day in an auction site, I saw this absolutely knackered, fire-damaged factory building, which was going for a stipend, a too-good-to-be-true price, which is often the case with property auctions because they don't want you to really see much or be able to do too much research on it. You just got to go and buy it. So I did. I bought it. That was just before the property crash. So as and during that period, I stopped working for Shed KM, started up my own business. Went into a partnership with a friend of mine, and we decided that two buildings we were going to do, Busey Old Hall, I was going to work with him as an architect. Would he then like to join me on this fire-damaged factory building in the middle of the Baltic? And you'd be pretty open-minded back then, because it was really a sort of a wasteland, with the only oasis at the time was the A Foundation. I don't know if you remember that. It then became Camp and Furnace. Afterwards, Elevator Studios, Tim and his brother Paul had started that. But the main one was going to be Baltic Creative, and the NWDA were very keen on this to happen, and also very keen for our building to get done. Now, we didn't join them in any way, but we started the idea that we would look at open plan studio space within this to marry up with everything else that was happening in the area. So it meant not just creating office space, but actually there were specific sectors that the area was going to look at: creative, digital media, arts, architecture, etc. And if we were to complement that, we felt that it would go pretty well, actually. And we've had it now for 8 years. I mean, the Baltic is unrecognisable now. In good and bad ways, to be totally honest, over those last 8 years. But no, that's been my involvement with Jordan Street. I've done a little bit of work with Baltic Creative on some of their buildings. Then the next one that I was invited into was Baltic Markets in Keynes Brewery with Independent Liverpool. They asked me to do the design for it. They'd picked what building they wanted within Keynes Brewery, the old bottling shed. I say shed, it makes it sound small, it was enormous. Would I do the design? I thought, yeah, it sounds like good fun. And we got planning for it. And it was at that point, really, when they said, well, how do we build it? And I sort of went through the process of, well, we've got the planning, but now we need to work up drawings. It now needs to be built. I think they came to the conclusion that they'd rather I join them on that full time and be a director of the business and work with them on it. And so alongside a couple of other people, Tim Haggis, Andreas Anastasio, we went and did Baltic Markets, which is still a thriving, successful business to this day.
One thing that I really do believe is that when you go to an area like the Baltic, it's the architecture and the working spaces within it that actually, you know, that make the footprint so important to the city. You know, and to be fair, Miles, you know, you're being very humble, but you've had a big big say in what that looks and feels like, and especially the way that the co-working spaces work in particular, which is a very modern way of doing business, isn't it?
It is. I mean, it's actually not something that we initially intended to do. That came about because we used to get an awful lot of inquiries from one-person companies. And I said, well, if we don't look at some sort of shared space offering, we're just going to lose those people and we're never going to get them back. And actually, co-working, people do co-working for a variety of reasons. One, it's to capture small companies when it's one or two people. But then actually, there's a legacy to it. So those one or two people often, well, as they grow and grow, become your sort of traditionally leased tenants, i.e. they'll take their own four walls. In the pandemic, we found that it was working both ways. You actually get a lot of people on the downsizing trajectory, and co-working suits that really well, as much as people who are wanting larger and larger spaces. I think it's fair to say the hybrid method of working is probably here to stay. I think for a long time people felt that that was a trend or a post-pandemic year. But I actually think for an awful lot of people, doing, say, 2 to 3 days in the office, 2 to 3 days at home, and if they work well, then that's here. That trend, I think, is here to stay, which is why I think quite a lot of clients have no longer want their large offices. They'll take a smaller one, and for staff that don't want to come to it, the co-working works really well for them. I think there will always be a desire for people to not spend their entire lives in one space. So working from home, I did it for 6 months. I thought it was great until I realised that I hated being in one building all the time. And as a result of that, we actually moved ourselves into Jordan Street as well. There is a reason why co-working works, because I think people will always want to be able to work somewhere else or just some variety in what space they're using.
You touched on previously there that you felt that when you go back to the Baltic, we've got it right and we've got it wrong in some points. Where do you think we need to concentrate on making sure that we do stay the right side of getting the mixture and the balance of work life there?
The Baltic was envisaged as an employment area primarily. So even in the very early plans, which weren't adopted, so they couldn't be enforced, but they were there nonetheless. It was seen actually that these buildings are best used as workspaces. Now, one of the first rules of converting a listed building, for example, is the use that you're intending it for should be closely aligned to the use the building was originally built for. Just to give you a couple of examples, St. Peter's Church in the Rope Walks is, you know, I think Liverpool's oldest Polish church, was turned into Alma del Cuba. That's actually quite a fitting use because it's using one big space, rather than dividing it up into, say, apartments. And the same can be said for, say, Baltic Creatives campus, which is just across the road from us. That's one big volume, and they've kept it as one big volume. Now, I know it's not a listed building, but the response to it was, well, let's keep it as a big volume and put the individual sheds in it. And things like that are really good creative reuses that I think you can only do with commercial, and by that I mean studios, offices, bars, restaurants. Sometimes, though, I feel that too many people, their comfort zone is let's build apartments or let's convert buildings into apartments. Now, I'm not saying that that mix isn't necessary, and in the new builds, I can see why people do it. But there are an awful lot of buildings, building conversions, that actually would suit commercial an awful lot more than trying to chop them up and turn them into flats. And I would like to see more mix. Because at the moment, it does seem as though the first wave of regeneration was to get in all the interesting companies, all the interesting people to work there. And then the latter stage is now let's build blocks of flats with some ground floor commercial use. And I do think that there's a danger that the Baltic could lose its way a little and look more into sort of solely residential buildings. Whereas actually what made it interesting in the first place was the people that worked there and the companies that were there. Another job that I was really, really pleased with was it was a very simple job, 22 Jordan Street, which I did for Baltic Creative, and it's as simple as making a load of shop front units onto Jamaica Street out of a tin shed building and put mezzanines in them. And as a building, when it was handed over, it was just very simple. What made it interesting was all of the different tenants. So you've got the likes of Skiddle at one end, Dorothy at another. an architecture company, another co-working space, etc. And it makes people, when they walk past it, just intrigued. They'll just slow down for a bit and have a look, which is all architecture probably needs to do sometimes. And that, for me, is more interesting than say, a residential building or something along those lines. I think that's what the Baltic needs to continue with.
Fascinating. And for me, your studio designs are all about being open plan. The spaces themselves are all open plan. You've got lots of co-working opportunities, as we touched on. And it's got a really modern, flexible workspace feel to it. Often, you know, using very simple materials in a really effective way. Light, airy, modern. For me, that's what your next big thing developments are all about. How important do you think it is that you get that right going forward?
I think there has to be some consistency. I mean, there are people that have walked into this building, for example, where I've returned back to using concrete panelling everywhere. And a very simple palette is glass, concrete. That's about it, basically. And they do familiarise themselves with, oh, that looks a bit like what you've done in the Baltic, etc. And I suppose I could be accused of being a bit of a one-trick pony in that respect. But if it works, and I know that people respond well to it, then we'll do it on other buildings. That changes quite a lot, though, when you go to look at the commercial buildings on Clock Tower Park, which is our biggest development. It's out on Longmoor Lane in Fazakerley. And it's in a similar vein as, say, Port Sunlight or any of these kind of philanthropic new towns, but on a smaller scale. It's an entire estate built in the 1890s with a boulevard and a main clock tower building. And the response to that was quite different because they're all listed buildings, but they're in various states of decay. And actually, the conservation officer I worked on at the time, she was brilliant. She said, look, if it's lost, it's lost. We're not in the business of trying to fake these buildings or do pastiche interiors or anything like that. And, you know, if you want to basically sandblast it back to brick or open them up, so actually it's more intriguing for us to see how they were built rather than trying to fake the finishes. That, to me, is a better response. I actually worked really well with her for years until she left the council. And they're some of our most fascinating buildings, actually, because they're brought right back to their primary construction, the brick and the engineered stonework and lintels, etc. One that we've just done, the main clock tower building, has a building within a building, because, again, of its large space, and getting back to what I was saying about how these large spaces are best suited to commercial, it has a table structure in the middle as a mezzanine, a office on the top, offices on the bottom. It's one of my favourite projects. And it does look quite different to this, but at the same time, I think anyone that looking at them, we'll see the sort of common similarities between the two. I wouldn't say it's along the lines of branding. It's not as important as branding. But we do tend to think that, well, if you've got stuff to work on one building, then sure, we'll just advance that and develop it as we go along.
I think it's fair to say as well that all of your buildings are different, and they're not all the same. You know, you've only got to go on your fantastic website to see the beautiful photographs and the way that they all work. And I think that's the important thing, is they do all work. You know, they really do work as designs. Where do you think that comes from your perspective? Personally, for you, where are your influences drawn from?
I was really lucky as a student. I did a part one placement Shed KM Architects, who I've still got unlimited time for. I haven't worked there for, it's probably going on about 10, 12 years now, actually. They had a very, very simple approach. Get the diagram to work and keep things simple, and everything else will follow suit. And actually, there's a few of us that have left there and set up our own practices. And whilst it's changed since we've left, I think it would be right to say that there are some similarities looking back. Other than that, we develop our own buildings as well. And actually, there's a lot to be said sometimes about keeping things simple and not necessarily using money as an excuse. So, for example, one of the biggest lies I often hear is, oh, we can't be very good, we've got no money. I was like, but I've delivered some pretty economical buildings that I'm really pleased with, because the materials aren't necessarily expensive. It's just well set out. I mean, Baltic Markets was not an expensive build. It was a pop-up installation, to use an overused term. It's a lot of plywood, it's a lot of OSB, it's a lot of various sheet materials that are, you know, £20 to £25 a sheet. But it's just set out well, and it's designed in a manner that everything lines up and relates and looks good. And that's what I think makes it work. This is the same. The vast majority of this building is built using a Portuguese concrete board called Viroc, which I will admit has got more expensive since I first used it. But nonetheless, it's just a case of keeping everything really simple, lining up. It's all based on the big glass roof, actually. The setting out of that sets out everything going down. Doesn't really need to be much more complicated than that sometimes. But after that, you did say the importance of architecture. I would actually say that the architecture is the second most important thing. You know, a really good portfolio of interesting tenants is what makes the buildings interesting. And then manage it well and keep them and get a good mix. That's what makes these places really work.
That's fascinating from my point of view, because obviously I would never have thought about that. But you're saying that the ingredients of what you've put in this space are just as important. And now you've said it out loud. Of course, that makes total sense. How many opportunities do you think they're going to be created just by having like-minded creative individuals in the same space? It makes total sense, doesn't it?
It does. I mean, let's take Jordan Street as an example. Co-working is 24 companies, which is a slightly distorted figure because each company is one person. And then there's another 12 in the business. And whilst not exclusively following has to be creative design, digital media, it can be that and companies that complement that. That we feel works well. And there's several sectors that we wouldn't rent to, and I'm not going to say who they are. But I just know that with that, it wouldn't work. Well, I'll give one example. Outbound call centres at a building like Jordan Street would be problematic because they're effectively call centres. Whereas actually places that... One really fascinating tenant we have, Jot Paper, is reprographics and traditional card making. They sit alongside a data analytic company that then sits alongside a music and late night events promotion that then sits alongside an architect, and the list goes on. And actually, whilst different, they all come from a creative and design-led background, and you find that actually that works really well. So curating of tenants sounds like a harsh phrase, as if you're sort of creating an art collection. But actually that long-term is what makes the developments work. And then you then throw into the mix what I said earlier about co-working and looking at a similar mix of people in there. Then you're hoping to sort of capture people on the way up as well, or they might work with each other, etc. I would say that's the most important thing. Architecture, the second most important thing. But the longevity of the scheme, that comes from the tenant mix, definitely.
We're sat here in Crosby, and Crosby, as far as I'm concerned, knowing the area well, has been crying out for this to happen here for ages and ages. Tell us a little bit about what you're doing here in Crosby then.
The building that we're in used to be a car showroom, so it was just a big steel portal-framed shed. And after that, it was retail. It used to be a furniture showroom. And the building at the back, the former mechanics building, was their storeroom in its later use. It sort of fell into disrepair. And when we first looked at it, we spoke to the council, and one of their biggest challenges that they're finding with this and other buildings in the area is what to do with large retail footprints. Because they openly admitted that whilst they could see small shops turning into coffee shops and other such examples, using new planning laws, use Class E laws, that was helping revitalise out-of-town high streets. When you get a building of this size, it was 8,000 square foot before we put another floor in. And there wasn't really anyone interested in it. And we said, well, actually, we've got a bit of experience doing mixed-use developments, obviously with stuff in the Baltic. Clock Tower Park been the one that we sort of reference more and more, actually. And then my experience with Baltic Markets on the hospitality side of things. So I think we can actually get an interesting mix here. Just to very quickly explain how the building came to look this way, actually, it's because of the back building. So we took a big chunk out of the front building, the bit that you walk through. So it's a ridiculously big corridor with a huge glass roof on it and olive trees. But the reason for that is so you always see the building behind it. We didn't want that to be the one that sort of got forgotten about. And actually, there's some of the most interesting spaces are in that building. And so we then work from hospitality, so two restaurant units, Liverpool Road Social, who are now open, Cantonetta are opening next month. The main body of this building as studio offices for a whole mix of uses and co-working. Actually, the building at the back, the moment we put our signboard up, and we use the word studios, not offices, and I'll never work out whether that was the right thing to do, because we used to get quite a lot of people ringing up for one-bed flats, and that wasn't really what we were doing. But we got a lot of interest from people who used to hire sports halls, church halls, etc., for their dance classes, for their aerobics, for anything else. And that led on to other inquiries. So the back building actually is an interesting mix. It ranges from a couple of personal trainer gyms to a cake decorating studio and estate agents, various other uses, yoga lounge, because those are the sorts of units that people want. So it's quite interesting once you start marketing a building like this at site stage, because you think you know what you're doing until you get all the kind of inquiries back, and then sort of you have to get steered by what that is. What was quite clear to us were two things. One was that the vast majority of people would walk here. They wanted to come to an alternative space to working from home, but they could do it by bike and by foot. So the idea that they would use co-work in the city centre was a bit of a trek just for alternative space. Whereas here was good. A lot of the businesses that have moved into here with their own private offices are the same. They're from the local area. They want to be closer to home, but they don't want to be working at home. And then the back building was fulfilling the need for larger volume spaces for what is still commercial use, but it's not offices necessarily. And those are spaces that just weren't around at the time, or they were spending a lot of money every year renting off other people. So actually, we'd quite like to have our own. And in turn, we always encourage subletting, actually. So if people feel as though one space is too big, well, think of the model differently. If you take the head lease and you share it with two or three people that are doing complementary or similar things, which can get them to work. That's the pretty diverse mix that we've got here. I mean, we've been open for 6 weeks now, and we're about 70% let. So clearly there was a desire for it.
It truly is an amazing space. I mean, you know, you can't walk past it without pressing your face against the glass to see what's inside. So it's going to be even more fantastic once it gets to capacity, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so. We've got the other restaurants to open soon. We've got Summer, where we've got an amount of outside space. It's very similar, though, to what I was saying about just going back to 22 Jordan Street. Again, it's a shopfront design exercise, nothing more, nothing less. And I actually did do the design for Liverpool Road Social. If it means that people walk past and sort of stop and stare in, and sometimes they'll come in, sometimes they won't, then that to me is a positive addition to any street. There's just some intrigue to it, basically, as to what's going on in there. Some of the most enjoyable parts of this job to me are actually the last 3 to 4 months of construction, but the first 12 months of completion, because that's where you move from the satisfying ending of it, but then actually the sort of filling and the using of the building, and tweaking it, no doubt, as we get more and more tenant requests, and then seeing how it works. The first sort of 12 months of it I find are really interesting. Obviously building and designing these places, but then seeing them operational as well.
Yeah, it's certainly a welcome addition to what's actually here on the ground in Sefton, for sure. Talk to me a little bit about planning permissions and the way you liaise and work with authorities and local councils, etc. Just how much of a challenge is it sometimes?
Planning law has changed recently. And for anyone listening that's interested in, for example, taking a small shop unit on a local high street. Closest one to me is Rose Lane in Mossley Hill, to give an example. And there was a handful of small derelict retail units. And let's say that you're a small independent coffee shop or similar, and you'd look at it and you'd be really tempted to take it, to lease it off the landlord. But niggling at the back of your mind would be, oh, I've got to get planning for this. I've got to move it from A1 shop to A3 cafe, which is the planning use term. And that's a big risk, because I'm going to have to sign up for something, or maybe just heads of terms, and then I've got to spend 2 to 3 months with the council, and nothing's guaranteed. And for someone that's not experienced with planning, that's pretty daunting. And I'm experienced with planning, and I find it daunting still. The government changed that So they bunched it all into a new use class E. And shops, cafes, restaurants, not pubs or bars, gyms, offices, and a handful of other uses all got bunched into this new letter of the alphabet, which meant that you can now, with confidence, lease or buy a shop and turn it into a cafe, because it's not, you're not changing from one letter of the alphabet to the other in the planning terms. You're not technically doing development in planning law. So that's made a massive difference. I've noticed that all over the place. Park Road and Dingle been one of the most significant ones. Rose Lane, Mossy Hill, and then around here as well. So take those kind of brief examples and then put it on a much larger scale, and that's basically what this building is. This was derelict retail. It now has restaurants, cafes, it has office use as its primary, but some leisure use, the old D uses, are in there as well. What it also means is that if a tenant ever leaves and someone comes in, we don't need to market it as, well, it's this use only. And that's the level, that's the area of the market you've got. You can actually open it up to a wider use. It's up to us as landlords to make sure that will work. So to answer your question, how do I find planning? I find it a lot better now that there's planning law change. That doesn't mean we don't have to ask permission for what we've done as an exterior. So the elevations and everything. And for that point, planning are very good. They're very proactive, and they do want it to happen as well. It's not as though we're battling against them. We are, as a development, we're not quite in the centre of Crosby by UDP terms, but you can see all around that, you know, we have other commercial units. Be good of me to perhaps promote Homebrew, which is a small bar, but they're opening one round here, and I'm not going to take credit saying that, oh, we've done this and everything else followed. But I think there's definitely changes in this particular area. So I'm saying around our site. Crosby Village itself, I will admit, that has been struggling of late. I partly put that down to over-pedestrianisation. That's perhaps an odd thing to say, but I do believe that you can go too far with pedestrianising areas. Take a great example of pedestrianisation is Castle Street in the city centre. It's one-lane traffic. They've widened the pavement to where the sun catches it. They've given pavement licences to every restaurant that wants it. And it's a really vibrant street full of bars and restaurants, but you could still drive down it one way. There was a consultation about whether they should pedestrianise Bowl Street, and many of the retailers said, don't. We don't. It's not going to help us. Actually, right now, Crosby Village, you can drive around it like a giant roundabout and not know what's in there. And that, I think, has been its biggest problem. So if I was to say anything about that, is that actually you can over-pedestrianise too much. I'm not saying that certain areas won't benefit from it. Once you go too far, you get people that say, oh, I never knew that that was in the middle of Crosby Village. So that was because you probably drive past it every day and never see in, or something along those lines. So there is a sort of balance on that part.
Well, that, again, that's very interesting, your take on it as well. And I'm very, very interested in the idea that you have actually attracted other businesses on the back of the work that you've done as well.
I think so. I mean, there's the old Pioneer Audio building across the road, which is, I'm not sure where they're at, but I know that they're looking at restaurant units in there. I think there's a change in management of the Pioneer Bar. There's other ones in the area as well. I mean, again, it would be wrong for me to sort of take full credit for it, but sometimes it just takes a small number of people to start inwardly investing to build confidence, and confidence is everything. Jordan Street was one of the first private developments to get done in the Baltic, at the same time as, you may remember, Constellations and Baltic Creatives Campus. And these weren't massive-scale developments. That was always the interesting thing about the Baltic, is that you can actually acquire buildings and land at a very decent price, which meant that in piecemeal, people could go in as individuals or as small teams and go and do projects. Constellations was one of my favourites. Becky built that at the same time that I finished Jordan Street, and I thought that was always quite a nice twinning of two projects, one a sort of knackered factory building that was an eyesore had suddenly come back to life, and then her site was where I think the council used to wash their wheelie bins, and then it became this incredible timber pavilion bar for a few years, and a handful of other interesting projects like that cropped up. It doesn't take much for people to suddenly go, oh, that area is interesting or it's not a dump. I'd like to think that we're probably one of the projects that's the same in this area.
So for anyone who's interested in maybe taking some space up in the new developments, especially here at Liverpool Road Studios, how would they get in touch with you?
We've got our own website. It's www.liverpoolroadstudios.co.uk. It's got our phone number on it. Actually, the best way is we've got an inquiry form, and it just says what kind of space you're after: co-working, own front door, private office, etc. And then a bit about your business. We actually find it quite useful to know that. And then we can get back with sort of specific information about what would work. So yes, that's the best website to get us on.
What can we do to keep in touch with what next big thing developments are doing?
Instagram is the one that I'm the most proactive on. I find it's just the best space to put all images of what we're doing, because we record images massively, as you can probably imagine. And we're also doing it to promote the tenants in this building. We have our own website, but as a sort of constant trickle, Instagram is my favourite by a long shot.
And obviously, if you search next big thing on Instagram, you're going to see what you're up to. So for anyone that's looking for your website, do you know the address?
Yeah, certainly. It's www.nextbigthingdevelopments.co.uk.
Miles, I know how busy you are. I know how busy you are trying to manage this new site as well. So I can't thank you enough for giving me some time today. So keep an eye out and do come down and have a look at what's going on with Next Big Thing Developments in Crosby for sure. It's a fantastic site.
Thank you very much.
Miles Pearson there, co-owner of Next Big Thing Offices. How did you meet Miles in the first place, Mark?
Well, as you said, it's such a fantastic place. I've been really, really watching it grow from nothing, Mick. And I really was interested in going down there and looking at the space, seeing how it tied in with areas like the Baltic, and potentially exploring the idea of some of the co-working spaces in there. And so I wanted to find out a little bit more. And so I reached out to Miles and managed to get an interview with him. He's an incredibly busy guy, but he managed to book some time aside for me, which was fantastic. And I wasn't disappointed, Mick. The actual offices themselves are fabulous. It's got all of the hallmarks that you'd expect from an NBT offices sort of development. It's amazing.
Yeah, good. Oh, well, I'll have to go up there. They don't go up to Crosby that much. But when you invite me to dinner sometime, I'll defo come up there and I'll have a look. And you're thinking of moving in there?
Well, I'm certainly looking at the space. I already know two or three people from that area that have already gone in there, and they're raving about what it's like there. One other good thing about it is you know, as you know, Mick, it's difficult to work sometimes from home and to be really, really productive because there's always something else going on. And so, as Miles said in his interview to me, to have somewhere that's close by where you live is very handy as well, especially if you've got the ability to work from home or from there in equal measure.
Fantastic. All right. Well, tell us how you get on that. I'm sure it's as great as you say, and I'll definitely have a look up there when I get that invite.
Yes, Mick, there's an open invite for you from this point forward then, Mick. Come down there. Oh, there's two fantastic restaurants there as well, right on the road front itself. So can't recommend it enough. Liverpool Road Social, fantastic.
The future is Crosby. You heard it here first, okay. The future is also Baltic Creative CIC. A big thank you to them. As I said before, Baltic Creative CIC supports the digital and creative sector in the Baltic Triangle business area, including this particular podcast. And by the way, if any tech startups are listening to this particular podcast and you want to find out more about Baltic Ventures, then log on to www.BalticVentures.co.uk and you can apply and find out more about this money that they have for new startups. You can apply and find out more right there. If you've got any ideas you have of potential interviewees for this particular podcast, then you know the email address, or at least you should do by now.
The email address is info@BalticTriangle.com. That's info@BalticTriangle.com. Well, Mick, that's pretty much it for us, isn't it, for another episode? As ever, we want to wish you all the very best. We want to thank you very, very much for listening to us. And we'll speak to you again very soon, hopefully.
Yeah, have a good month.